Okay. Yeah. Good afternoon to all of you. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. So I don't have much time. So these are basically the topics I would like to cover today. Sort of basic consideration of what I see between, I mean, climate change and drought. So we'll talk about the transpiration response to VPD, which is one of the mechanisms we're pursuing, which I think has a lot of relevance for climate change adaptation. We'll talk about possible mechanisms which involve aquaporin gene expression, and then, if I've got time, trying to sort of simulate the effect of some of those traits on yield. But I mean, I may not have time. Okay, so a couple of slides. So I come from ECRISAT. We are working in the semi-arid tropics. So here I'm showing you a bit of data on maximum temperature in two of our stations. I mean, in the reddish or in India, the bluish or in Africa. No, that's the contrary. To give you and then the sort of top bar is basically the hypothetical sort of threshold of temperature tolerance of reproduction in the crop we work with, not wheat, not barley. I mean, the take-home message from that slide is that while across the season, I mean, we never really have a temperature that sort of would be a problem for reproductive success in our crop. No? But if I plot, I mean, the maximum VPD in those same environment, well, I should tell you also that the cropping season is usually between June and October, and then a post-rainy season following after. I mean, the message from this is that we've got, and again, I've plotted a sort of VPD threshold above which we can consider that the evaporative demand becomes really, really harsh. And so in all of our environment, I mean, we have a problem of VPD. So I sort of would like to take you to the issue of climate change, not so much from the effect of an increased temperature and what it could cause for reproductive success, but more on the effect it would have through VPD on affecting the plant-water relation, and then indirectly the effect on drought. Okay, a slide that sort of sums up years of data working with a tube system in which we have basically deciphered, you know, how plants use water. And so the message from that slide is, well, if we plot water use as a function of time, that's data from chickpea, but we've got similar data in different species. Really what matters is not so much how much water they extract from the soil profile, but how they manage a limited amount of water, with slight changes in how they use post and pre flowering water. So there's really two things that we want to focus on now, is look at why they have those changes in the pattern of plant water use. And so there's two things that we are now focusing on, which is like the canopy conductance and then, of course, the size of the canopy. So today we'll be only talking about the conductance, which includes how the conductance respond to high evaporative demand. No? I mean, there's people that phenotype in the field and then they measure canopy temperature, which can be sometimes a sort of consequence of those what I call the building block of the plant water budget, which are really the causal reason why we have sort of differences in the pattern of plant water use. Okay, so one such trait is the capacity of plant to restrict transpiration under high VPD. You've got in the y-axis transpiration rate, which is no more than the ratio of transpiration by the leaf area, so it's the rate of water loss per unit of leaf area per unit of time as a function of the vapor pressure deficit. It's again a typical response that we've got, well, here there's a case of pearl millet, but we've got very similar response, which we'll see later, in different species, distinguishing really terminal drought adapted and terminal drought sensitive lines. So there's really two mechanisms, difference in conductance when the VPD is low, and then a restriction of that conductance and when the VPD becomes high. And so the relevance of that system is it becomes very water costly to fix carbon at a high VPD, because transpiration efficiency is an inverse relation to VPD. So just to sort of glance through the sort of genotypic variation we have found across crops, that's the case of peanuts, that's the case of cowpeas, where we've got QTL, in fact, in that now. That's the case of sorghum. Again, as the same axis on the Y. Here we did that in outdoor condition in a season when we have high VPD prevailing at midday and after. What I find interesting in this is that we've got two sorghum line introgressed with the stay-green QTLs, and the black is the recurrent R16, so we've got a significant sort of reduction in the leaf conductance under, well, the midday, which is under high VPD conditions, in those stay-green 3 and stay-green B, and it's not only one line, it's several lines introgressed with the same QTL that show exactly the same response. And then all the sort of variation across different QTL. And then B35, which is a donor for stay-green, then is in this case is donor for that particular response. Here, that's a case of sorghum germplasm. In fact, I should sort of show you why they are so interesting. What we did, I'll go back to the previous slide later, in those tubes, the thing we can do really well with those tubes is measure water use efficiency, because we can measure the water used by the crops throughout the entire life of the crop, and then measure biomass and a very relevant sort of yield. And so we have a really large variation in transpiration efficiency. And what we've done is we've played around with the extreme. And so if I go back to the previous slide, in fact, those extremes are actually contrasting for that VPD response, the high TE line being VPD sensitive and the low TE line being VPD insensitive. And we have very similar data in, well, other sort of set of germplasm of sorghum, similar data in the case of pearl millet. So that's, I think that's a trait that has high relevance for water productivity. So if I summarize the sort of response that we have seen over the years in different species, well, I've shown you in millet the case of an unlimited response to a limited response and a breakpoint, but we have also different sort of responses, some that come with a small slope and some that come with a fairly high slope and then eventually a breakpoint. All right, so how do we phenotype for that? Well, initially what we have to do is measure leaf area, measure transpiration, so that's the traditional way of doing a few years ago. The rate limiting factor there is basically weighing the pots and then cutting the plants and measuring the leaf area. And so very recently I've set up a new platform now at ICRISAT, in which the leaf area is going to be given by those scanners. Those scanners are a type of LiDAR. They project a laser line on top of the canopy. On the back of that white box, we've got a camera that photographs at a very high rate, generates 3D images, and then there's software in the computer that basically extracts a number of plant parameters, and in particular, leaf area. It's quite simple. And so the scanners are right here. They are sort of mounted on that irrigation boom at a very constant speed, and they photograph all those plots. We've got about 4,800 plots. So each plot is not a pot, it's two pots. And what I've tried to do there is to be as close as possible to the field environment in terms of the number of plants that you keep in plots. So each plot is, depending on the species, 4, 6 to 8 plants per plot. So we're not measuring single plants. The second component of it is a set of load cells, which at the moment is a prototype. We've got 50 of them to get the water transpiration component, and it's worked really well. So now it's a matter of getting money to get 2,000 of these. But essentially the idea there is to have a large throughput, and you see those small little things here, a bunch of sensors to capture the environmental variation. So if you want to know more about the platform, we can talk at coffee break. Okay, mechanism for that VPD response. You've got to realize that the response is fairly rapid, and so it can't be mediated by a biochemical component. It has to be something else. So the hypothesis is that we've got some sort of anaerobic limitation somewhere in the system. I've schematically represented the plant like, a bunch of resistors, and we're not going to talk about everything, but we sort of put the hypothesis that we may have an aerodynamic restriction at the level of the root system, which is what I represent by those syringes with, you know, either a small piston or a big piston. I guess, I mean, I've been too much of a kid, I mean, you know, with those syringes and, you know, splashing on people, and it works really better when you have a big piston. Okay, that's a slide from Stoidel, which gives you an idea of how plants absorb water in the root system. So that's a transversal cut of the root. There's two pathways, the apoplastic pathways, where the water penetrates between the cells, the symplastic pathways, where the water penetrates the cells through membrane channels called aquaporins. And we know that those two, we don't know a lot about those two pathways, but we know that they vary in their hydraulic conductivity. And so, do we have material contrasting for that VPD response, contrasting for, you know, the amount of water that goes through either of these two channels? And since one of those channels involves aquaporins, then is it related to differences in the function of aquaporin in those different lines? So that's a picture that shows you, you know, the mean to inhibit those two pathways. We inhibit the apoplastic pathways by blocking it with a flux of hydrogen ferrocyanide, and then a pulse of CuSO4, the carbon cupric sulfate. You see those sort of blackish formation of precipitate that basically blocks the water. And then for blocking the aquaporin, I mean, we simply use a number of inhibitors. I mean, in our case, we use a lot of silver nitrate. And then after that, the plants are sort of sitting on balancers, exposed to either treatment. And then we follow that up with 10 or 20 minutes increment. So that's a typical sort of response that we obtain. In white, we have a typically sort of VPD insensitive line. In black, a VPD sensitive. Well, first of all, I mean, so in the y-axis, you've got the transpiration as a function of a normalized to a non-inhibited control as a function of time when the inhibition starts around there. What it tells us is what plants basically depend a lot more on the apoplast, because the inhibition from the apoplast blockage is more than the inhibition of transpiration from the symplastic sort of inhibition. But what we see is that we've got a sort of reversal of effect between VPD sensitive and VPD insensitive. So in other words, the VPD insensitive lines are less dependent on the apoplast for water channeling. And so that's the situation under low VPD conditions, so there's not much challenge put on the plant. When you challenge the plant with a higher VPD, the situation is sort of exacerbated. The VPD sensitive suffers a lot more the blockage of the apoplast. And so the sort of current hypothesis is that we would have VPD sensitive material being like stuck with an apoplast, and then when the water demand is higher, they can't really tune up the water channeling with the symplastic pathway. And while VPD insensitive would have the mean to sort of modulate water transport with a symplastic pathway. And that's where the aquaporins come in. So what we've done is that we have gotten back to contrasting sorghum germplasm, contrasting for that transpiration response to VPD. We have run an experiment again, where we have exposed plants to increasing VPD, and then we have collected tissue in the morning in those two chambers when both were at a low VPD condition. We've collected tissue in the afternoon in both chambers, one that was remaining under low VPD and one that was exposed to high VPD. That's to control the diurnal cycle, because we know that the aquaporin expression sort of do something like this during the day. And I don't have time to expand on you know, the series of data that we've got there. But basically, this is a high VPD versus low VPD sort of normalization of the data between the VPD insensitive and the VPD sensitive lines. We've looked at aquaporin expression in different family members. And the one thing that we see is that we've got several of the pips. The nomenclature may not be fully correct. That's an old, a 6 months old slide. Since then, we have sort of looked at the correspondence with the aquaporin in the Poaceae family, and so the name could be a little bit different now. But essentially, we've got differences in the PIP expression, PIP2 expression, in several of them, which we hypothesize are those that facilitate the water transport in the symplast. And these are data, I should have mentioned that these are data from the root tissue, but we have also similar data in the shoot tissue. So a couple of more slides, I've got time.
You're into your questions.
All right, okay. Yeah, anyway, okay, we've got traits. I work for ICRISAT, so we really want to have the application. It's quite nice to see that we've got an important phenotype in which we have at least the hypothesis that there are certain proteins that may play an important role in those. On those phenotypes, but on the other side, we would like to see whether that phenotype matters for increasing yield. So we use quite a lot now of crop simulation modeling to test the effect of those phenotypes. And the crop model gives you, a yield increase. Here, that's in sorghum, where we have simulated with AppSim the change in that phenotype. And those different colors correspond to different stress environments in the post-rainy sorghum situation in South India, but basically what it tells us is that trait would have a positive effect in most environments. There would be only a few sort of dots falling below the line in the blue case where there's really no stress. So there's a few years there where we would be sort of maybe losing yield, but by and large, that would work in all the situation. And I've simulated the same sort of thing in the case of peanuts. Well, in a block of West Africa, and the color coding would tell you more or less where that trait would have an effect on yield, essentially, above 12, 11 degree latitude, more or less. So, again, there's the crop model quite useful to predict, where the trait would have a value. So just like a concluding slide to give you an idea of at the different level where we work. The tube system being in the middle, sort of sorting out quite a bit of things, a bit of upstream work to really trait characterization, and then even more upstream from that, and then the downstream application through simulation. So I guess I'll skip this, and if you've got questions. Now we've started looking at canopy temperature indeed as a convenient proxy for looking at this. So we do have differences in the canopy temperature. For example, in that big screening of sorghum in the tube system, so we did a similar screening for pearl millet, and then we measured temperature in these, and we've got a relationship between the TE difference, which we know are related to differences in the VPD response, and the canopy temperature. But the relationship is not, I can show it to you, it's not that nice, because it's like this. There's a whole range of temperature changes which are not related to VPD response difference, and then suddenly we have changes in temperature that are related to VPD response. So it's there's more things behind the canopy temperature that I don't fully understand. Yeah.
You want to have a question?
Have you done any inhibition of plastic in transport in temperate plastics like wheat?
No. No, but I know that there's Walid Sadok in Louvain, University of Louvain, does quite a bit of work on the wheat. So he's got even published data there, I think. Yeah.
Good. Okay, I think we'll move on. Thanks a lot, Vincent.
Yeah.